Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Nikki from Menlo Park, California. Welcome, Nikki.
Hi.
How are
you?
Thank
you. I'm doing great.
Great. It's great to have you on the air with us today.
Yeah, this is very exciting.
Great.
Thank you.
Nikki, tell us a little bit about your recording practice and Sherry's new book.
Yeah, I'd be very happy to. So I went to a workshop with Sherry back in early summer. I think it was in June. And we worked in that workshop on making a recording. And this is just like one of these turning points in my practice. It was like amazing. And I didn't even really have a recording device. I was borrowing one.
Uh-huh.
And so I went out after this workshop and got my little recording device, and I made this one recording. It's just one recording, and it's 17 minutes long, and it just it's got reassurances and reminders to pay attention. A lot of about what she talks about in the book about moving the focus of attention,
yeah,
sort of moving it to different places in my body or in the environment, and so it's this 17-minute piece that I just fell in love with it when I started listening to it. I mean, like I practically wanted to marry my recorder when I it was like everything that I always wanted to hear was
yeah.
just right there and available.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And so all you have to do is pick it up and hit play.
Yeah, you just pick it up and hit play. And so I started just sort of listening to it whenever I wasn't really cognitively engaged in something, like
uh-huh.
while driving or while exercising. I love to use it while hiking. You know, it's just kind of playing there in the background while I'm enjoying the outdoors.
Yes. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I can be in nature, which for me is often a place where I feel more relaxed and centered. And even there, sometimes I will find myself caught in a story in my head.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I project, that reminder could be really helpful to tune in to the beauty of nature where I actually am in this moment.
It totally is. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could be anywhere and missing what's going on. So,
yeah,
it's really about practicing practicing just coming back to now, and I also really love what she talks about in terms of, well, in this book, it's about moving from the light room to the dark room.
Yeah.
I mean, moving from the dark room to the light room. this practice I find is really powerful for awareness of when I'm identified, because
yes.
it's really interesting because I can put on my tape, and if it doesn't sound right, or if it doesn't make sense to me, or if I don't want to hear it, I know what's going on.
That's fascinating. Are you saying that you know you're identified when you're having that experience?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I've found this to be a really incredible awareness tool. Because it really helps me see the difference in a very concrete way between identified and not identified.
So it sounds like it highlights the difference between those times and experiences when you're identified, and helps to remind you what the light room looks like and feels like to you.
Yeah, exactly, And I've practiced loving kindness meditation, but my attention can get derailed. But with this, it's like the auditory nature of it, and the fact that it keeps going even when my mind drifts. It disrupts the thinking process and like really snaps you out of it
uh-huh.
in a very powerful way.
Great. Yeah, that's my experience as well. But the fact that I put it on repeat mode, because conditioning seems to use repeat mode also. So if I'm going to have a replacement for conditioning, you know, for me it needs to be a pretty constant reminder of what's important to me, what I want my attention on, what I want my life to be, how I want to be focused. It needs to be nearly constant.
Yeah, yeah. And I've noticed using it a lot that when I'm not playing it, the things on the tape will, I say tape, but it's digital, will spontaneously come up in my mind.
Yeah.
Like I'll hear that recording running through my mind, sort of replacing, I don't know if it's replacing the negative one, but it's definitely like, it's like getting a song caught in your head, but it's like all these really wonderful things.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of finally the right song caught in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if this is your experience. I had the pleasure of being at the monastery last weekend for the workshop on hungry ghosts and subpersonalities, and I was aware of some conditioning come up. And what I noticed is the way you were just describing, that there were parts of my reminder tapes that would just play kind of just at the right time for what I needed, and so I could focus on that to bring me back to the experience that I wanted to be having.
Yeah. Yeah, like you're getting exactly what you need and exactly when you need it.
Yes. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, it was so fun what you said at the beginning about you wanting to marry your reminder tape. Yeah, it made me laugh. And yet, it speaks to that experience that we're all going for of having someone who knows us intimately, who can say what we want to hear at all the times that we want to hear it in all of the ways that we need to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they can just walk around with you all the time.
Yeah,
I think my conditioning, I tried to do this years ago, and my conditioning had a hissy fit with it, and I just didn't, it wouldn't work. But I found now that it's like, it's such a joy to be brought back into that world.
Yes, yes, yes. And for me to have the experience of being guided through that process in the way that Sherry's able to do for us,
yes.
To lay out the process, to see all of the angles of why we're doing this and the stories that conditioning is going to come up with to try to derail us, and to see the whole big picture and to have that communicated to me is really supportive and helpful.
Oh yeah, that was incredible. The day-long workshop that we did went through all these different kinds of messages, and yeah, to have that guidance and the support of the Sangha all doing it together,
yeah.
Like a lot of things. Even now when certain reassurances come up, I can think of the person who said it in the group, and I feel kind of connected.
Yes, 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 that's great. And I'm looking forward to more of it in the email class, too, which I understand we'll be bringing these reminding and recording processes into that, too, as well.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally psyched.
Fun. Nikki, anything else you'd like to share with us around this?
You know, one other thing that I do with it that I think is really fun is that sometimes when I get really identified, and I know I'm identified, and I will take the recording and I will try to speak into the recording what my mind is trying to tell me. And first of all, it's very hard because it doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
And then I play it back and it sounds so silly that it's like such a and then I play that back a couple times and then I play the reassurance and it just really helps me see what's going on.
Wow. So let me see if I'm following you. What you do is you speak into the recording device, the story that you're hearing?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then you go back and listen to it. And when you listen to it later, it sounds like you're very disidentified from that.
Well, even if I listen to it right then and there again,
yes. Yes.
it sounds so serious and like real, but then when you try to put it into words and articulate it, it usually sounds about like a middle schooler. And
right.
Then it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Middle schooler being generous, in my experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is really fascinating. And I project a lot of willingness to do that and to really see through it immediately, sounds like.
Yeah, I even have the experience with this practice of like, ooh, I'm identified, cool. Let me see what that is. and then I get to do that.
Yeah. I project a lot of willingness onto that. That's great.
I have a lot of gratitude for this practice. I think it's awesome.
Yes, me too. Nikki, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure for me.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I have to tell you, there's one other aspect to this.
Tell me.
And that is that I will tell you that I have had an incredibly frustrating afternoon.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those that went steadily downhill when everything I tried to do didn't work.
Yes.
Okay, now you both know, you and Nikki both know that an email class started today, a rather large email class, and not a single bit of technology that I need in order to do my part of that class is working.
Wow.
So I had just gotten to this realization right before it was time to get on the show, and listening to the two of you talk, I completely disidentified.
Wow.
So it works even if it's somebody else having a disidentified or disidentifying conversation.
Wow.
So all of the things that the two of you said, you know, I could have been listening to, I could have heard on a recording that I made. So it was just fun. And I sort of felt like I think people feel when they listen to the archives of the radio show.
I was just going to say that when you were talking about that.
Just being with Sangha and listening to people talk about how they disidentify and the tools and, you know, getting caught and coming back to center, it's a disidentifying experience.
Yes.
That was very, very fun.
Great. Great. I'm glad that worked for you.
Yes, thank you very much, both of you.
I don't know about you, but for me with technology, when it doesn't work, I find myself in a place of kind of helplessness and hopelessness. And
well, yes. An email class without a computer is just a kind of a world of hurt.
Not the same.
So I'm sure a miracle is just on its way here any minute now.
Yeah, well, I'm sending you lots of good energy for computer and technology that works.
The technology gods need to smile in this direction.
Exactly. I have some announcements, Sherry.
Right.
There are many opportunities to join you, explore your new book, and gain some experience in using these new tools that are mentioned in your book and that Nikki and I talked about as well. And the next one is in San Diego this coming weekend.
Yep.
And then the following weekend at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose, at East West Bookstore in Mountain View on Thursday, November 18th, East West Bookshop in Seattle on December 9th, and then back to Mountain View for a workshop at the Mountain View Zen Center on December 11th, and then the New Year's Retreat from December 27th to January 1st.
Hmm.
Great.
I hope people come out and join Sangha.
Yes. And thank you for your willingness to get on lots of airplanes and go from A to B and back to A and then to C and around to D. And
yeah. Well, fortunately, I get to go see great people.
Yes.
So that makes it worth doing. If it were not for the great people, that would be way too much coming and going.
Yes. Yeah. Great. And I'd like to remind our callers in the queue here to keep their conversation to one topic, please. And let's talk to our callers. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Pasha. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Very, very good.
Good.
Thank you. This is my test call I'm making from a new iPhone app that allows to connect to the open air and sometimes be the first on the call.
Well, now, as soon as my technology is up and running, I want to hear more about that.
Yes. I'd like, this has been already the third week I've tested this app, and I'd like to share with the people it allows to hear the open air archives. It allows to hear the last show before it's published on a podcast, and it allows also to call in and join the show. And besides that, the reason for my call, besides testing the iPhone app, is to report my progress on what I've been doing in terms of reaching my child, and as an intermediate step, I'm going through holding my wife and my child as the same way I would hold my inner child, which is more challenging for me to do. So with my child and my wife, it was a very wonderful experience, and it's much easier because it's something I can see, it's something I can really hold, and it's very refreshing and very reaffirming for me to be able to be an adult. Since I can't physically become my child, I'm still be able to be an adult and provide that care and hold and compassion for him.
And Pasha, when you are there holding your wife and your external child, can you feel that little boy in you there as part of the family group?
Yes, I feel I don't have him mentally as a kind of mental picture, but I have the same. I feel it's hard to describe. It's a feeling everything is taken care of. It's it's a comfortable place. It's a place of nothing can go wrong. It's a place of real connection with my child and my wife, and it seems like I'm being held there too. As a part of that embrace.
Yes. And I have one other curiosity, since I imagine you two have talked about this. Can your wife feel those young parts of her being embraced in the same way?
We haven't talked with her about this, but she listened to the show, and before even she listened to the show, she felt that I'm holding her, and she just came to me and said thank you for being there, and it was really kind of more unexpected moment. But yeah, it was a moment of real connection. I felt I can sense her and help her. And she had a difficult day, and she's a new mom. She is overwhelmed with so many things. So she said thank you for helping with it and being patient with. But before I came, I get there, it took me a week, and first week there was I went through the period of a tantrum of my inner child, which was well, I'm not sure how to describe it. Basically, well, you're gonna go now take care of other people, and nobody's gonna take care of me, and I'm just gonna scream, and everything kind of falls apart from there. But so it took me a week to reconnect, to calm down the child, and get back into adult place and start moving in small steps, and been very helpful. So,
yeah.
And I probably need a little bit more time, be there. It's kind of a new place for me to be actually holding my family, and it feels so good to be there that I'd like to build a nest there first, and then move to my inner child.
Yes, yes, so. Yes. And you know, in the big scheme of things, a week is really quite fast, don't you think?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And you know, it's such a great experience to move into that place. Well, first of all, to move into that place with your family, because it is hard to be a family. And so with all of you doing this together, you know, that's really increasing the odds tremendously that you're going to be able to stay a family. And then as you're doing that, to bring in more and more aspects of you and your wife, so there's that safe place for both of you to be, and then with your child, to have him be able to experience being in that place, that loving, kind, compassionate place of well-being with his parents. My gosh, I mean, who of us didn't dream of having that experience?
Yes, I remember as a very young child. I think before even I was able to speak, I felt so foreign in a land of big people that don't understand anything. One of the first memories I first met another child, and it was such a relief that I'm not alone struggling through this world of big people. And I felt like later, I guess, when I realized that I'm not always going to be stuck in that little people world that I'm going to grow up, then I had the desire that I'm going to somehow learn how to speak with and connect with the children, and I'm gonna listen to them more, and I'm gonna be for them what I wished had at that time.
Yes, yeah, and it all starts with ourselves, doesn't it? I mean, as you are practicing this with your family, as you embrace those little parts of you into that loving circle, then that's just going to expand, and your ability to really to bring everybody into that compassionate circle becomes a possibility. Because what we get is you know, we're all walking around in big bodies, but we still feel like little people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what was also a discovery for me that when I had a tantrum of any child of, well, you're not going to be able to take care of me, there'll be no time. When are you going to find time for me if you're going to spend all your energy with? And once I start taking care of my real child, I noticed that, well, I'm holding my real child and I'm giving break to my wife so she can go do other stuff besides constantly changing him and feeding and bottles and pumps and so many things. And it felt also I'm holding my wife because I'm helping her through the child also, not only directly.
Yes.
But it felt like, wow, this doesn't have to be, love doesn't have to be divided in little shares and given in small portions. It could be, it could be shared. It could be bigger than, and that was giving me and my child, I guess, reassurances of we all can be there together.
Yes. What a great point that the more it's shared with love, the more it's shared, the bigger it gets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's contradicting the mathematics somehow.
Yeah. All right. Well,
right. Thank you so much, Shady.
Oh. Yeah, thank you. That's a great report. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
All right.
And I'll call again. Thank you.
Yes, please. And send me the information.
Oh, yes. I will.
Okay. All right.
Thank
Thanks, Masha.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was an inspiring story, Sherry.
Wasn't it? Gosh, it's just what we all dream of. And to take those steps to turn that into actual life experience in the midst of all of the stress and strain of, you know, fully participating in life as people are, but to choose and to prioritize that kind of unconditional love and acceptance is a glorious thing.
Glorious.
And to realize, I mean, the other thing I got out of Pasha's story is, you know, there's that feeling that this is just going to make things harder. Oh God, now I have to love you on top of, you know, and then you're going to want something from me, and I'm going to have to take care of you, and to have that realization that it just makes everything so much easier and more manageable.
Yes.
And fun, and loving, and kind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Want you bathed in an ocean of roses? Want you swam in a river of...
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, And we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Michael from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Michael.
Hi,
doing?
Sherry. Thanks for... So-so.
Say more about
that's
that,
why I'm
please.
Calling.
Say what?
That's the conundrum that I'm calling you about. I guess my question has been, I'm a little bit unsure how one should sort of relate to problems in the world. I'm a professor of political philosophy. I spend a lot of time reading the news, following current events. I work on human rights related issues and so forth. And a lot of times, I get really down because the state of the world in lots of instances is not so good. And so I find myself in a real quandary, not quite knowing whether it's appropriate to be sort of down in the dumps about those kinds of things. But then on the other hand, if I sort of focus on, well, in my own life I'm happy and I'm happy with my partner and so forth, then I sort of think, well, am I ignoring all the suffering that's going on out in the world? Is it sort of irresponsible to sort of feel that way? And I just kind of get myself into a mess.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, I can certainly relate to that mess. It's really, really difficult to stay open-hearted to everything that's going on and remain focused on what you choose instead. It's not something in a dualistic world. It's not the kind of thing we are taught is possible. You know, how can you care deeply, and be willing to do everything that you can possibly do without believing that any of it is necessarily true or real, and finding the willingness and the ability to live the difference you know is possible.
That's the predicament precisely, although you said it about 10 times better than I could have hoped to.
Well, I've been probably looking at it for longer. But that's in a dualistic world, it's I either have to close my heart so that I can stand to be here, or I open my heart and I become part of the problem. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, is there a practice that you can recommend, or is there something that you suggest as a way of sort of learning to live in that space in between?
Yeah, I think that the best tool, in our practice there are five processes that we focus on: aspects of the personality or subpersonalities, beliefs and assumptions, projection, disidentification, and centering. And I think that the first three, of course, fit beautifully into what you're looking at. So we grow up with a certain set of beliefs and assumptions that for almost everybody remain completely unquestioned. You know, people believe that when they hit, say, high school and college, that they're really thinking for themselves. And, of course, thinking for ourselves is something that for most folks just absolutely never happens. But we believe that it's true. So, you know, we look at, you know, well, my parents this, or the way I grew up that, and yes, I agree with that, but no, I don't agree with that. And that's kind of the total of thinking for oneself. You know what I mean
right.
by that?
Right. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so
I mean, I see that with lots of students.
Yes, yes. And you just kind of want to say, no, that's not it, but it's not helpful because they don't care. So the next part of that is that that becomes our identity, which, you know, around that, you know, the early, I don't know, middle to late teens and early 20s, we're really solidifying our identity. You know, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, this is what I believe, this is what's important to me. I don't like that, I do like that, I think that, okay? And then once those beliefs are put in place, we project the world that we live in based on those beliefs and assumptions. So literally, the karma, the conditioning that has brought us to that state, as we look out through all of that, we are literally creating the world outside of us based on those beliefs and assumptions.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because
sure.
That's one point where I actually have a lot of struggle. I mean, because I've read a lot and I've heard a lot from various people about that sort of idea of, you know, we project that out onto the world. And yet, you know, there is the reality of people starving to death. There is the reality of people being tortured. There is the reality of people being locked away in dark prisons and never seeing their families again. And it's not a projection. It's a fact.
Here's the point of that, though. Here's mm-hmm. where we get into difficulty.
Yeah.
Is it a problem or isn't it a problem? Now, I'm going to project just wildly from this brilliant, intuitive place where I live, that you don't agree with those behaviors.
Right.
Yeah. But we can know that a lot of folks do, or those kinds of behaviors wouldn't exist. So the person who says certain people need to be locked up and tortured in order to make the rest of us safe is coming from a belief system that is just as strong and in place and believable to them as your belief that, no, it is never okay to lock up somebody and torture them regardless of, okay? So we've got the yes side of it and the no side of it. And if we go back through the history of human beings, what we get is people lining up on one side or another of an issue and duking it out or killing each other or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So figuring out which beliefs are right, to me, is never going to be helpful because it's a matter of what you believe. But seeing how belief works can be very, very helpful. So if you get it that the world around you, the world that you're seeing because of an orientation that you have to life, you can begin to follow that, all of that outside, back inside, and find all of those parts of you right there inside you. You know, each one of us a microcosm, and all of these different issues that exist in the world are at war inside of each one of us. So as we begin to bring it back inside, we have the possibility of a deeper understanding, first of all, and also the possibility of having a different relationship with all of these issues and the people who are holding and perpetuating these issues. And of course, I would suggest that the possibility that's there is compassion.
Right. And so then out of compassion, we should be further motivated to do the most we can, et cetera.
We certainly can be, yes. So I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show or if have a new book out or any of that stuff, but I have a section on a recording that I listen to that's quotes from my heroes, and one of them is from Gandhi. And mm-hmm. what he said was, if you don't find God in the next person you meet, it's no use looking for him elsewhere. Now, that's a powerful statement, because, of course, the next person you meet could be somebody that my karmic conditioning would say is a vile, miserable excuse for a human being. Mm-hmm. So what are we being asked to do as spiritual people? And from what I project onto what Gandhi is saying is we have to stop looking at the surface of things. We're called to explore life and what we consider reality at a much, 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 much deeper level.
And so, I mean, it's kind of appropriate today because it's an election day and people will have their different views about different sides and what that's going to translate into in terms of, the future of one thing or another. And we're supposed to, I mean, I take it from what you're saying, which makes a lot of sense. I don't know, and yet somehow it seems that, there are, even if we can be compassionate toward people who are acting in ways that will, perhaps again in our view, but perhaps again our view is carefully considered and borne out by, centuries of deep reflection and whatever else, a very strong moral tradition, that is going to sort of instrumentalize and exploit and ultimately hurt people and cause a lot of suffering, the appropriate reaction is still to say, is still to be compassionate.
Well,
towards those people, and then sort of, I guess my question is, what about the people who get the short end of the stick?
Right. Well, if I'm sure you've spent far more time at this than I have, but if we look at the history of humanity, the thing that we can know is that this very thing has been going on for as long as we know about what human beings have been doing. This group against this group. Fighting this group killing this group believing this group fighting for this group. That process has been going on forever. Now, it seems to me that we always believe as human beings that we are going to reach a point of education, of sophistication, of technology, of something that is going to allow us to be different. Doesn't seem to be the case. Now, as that's been going on throughout history, we've also had brilliant, beautiful, compassionate, kind people who have guided us in another direction and offered us another possibility. And it sounds like you, as I, have found those people to be inspiring and guiding lights for us to follow. When we are in a position of perhaps being in danger of making what even we would consider an unfortunate choice. So all of that has been going right along, and I think it's just up to each one of us to decide which we want to contribute to. Because, I can get myself pretty worked up. And I can do a lot of, good Lord, what is the matter with these people? How do they think that? I know that attitude is not the contribution that I want to make. Because when I go to that place, then I am in exactly the place that they are in, even though what I'm saying is on the opposite end of that particular duality. So, what do I choose to do? I choose to put my attention where I feel it can be helpful to primarily, as you indicated, those folks who've gotten the short end of the stick. And to do that, the practice is to do that without feeling the need to hate or judge or punish the ones that, it seems to me, got the long end of the stick and should be more generous than they are.
Yeah, that sounds. I hear what you're saying, and
it's not easy.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It seems. Yeah, I mean maybe you know. I mean maybe it's precisely that deeply dualistic tradition of thinking about morality and immorality, justice and injustice that we've been so deeply acculturated to that makes that seem hard or wrong or something, and maybe that's the trick is to get outside of that. I mean, maybe that's where the, for me, where the work needs to.
When I get into that place that I project you're in right now, I go rent the movie Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
And get a good dose of wow. I'm glad that wasn't me because, you know, I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have been able to stick to it. And yet the fact that somebody did is all the proof we need that we can.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. Let's talk again.
Okay, take care. Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was very powerful, Sherry.
It's such a... somebody said to me, there's a big price to pay for being aware.
Uh-huh.
And I think that exactly what we were just talking about.
Yes.
The more aware one is, the more that kind of suffering is possible. You know, there's the suffering in I want that and I'm not getting what I want. But then there's the suffering that comes with looking around and seeing what's happening and knowing that a different possibility is so available to us and that as a people, there aren't enough of us choosing that possibility.
Yeah.
That's a heartbreaking
You know, what occurred to me when you said there's a big price for being aware is that there's a bigger price for not being aware?
Yes. Yes. It just doesn't always look that way.
Yes.
Yeah, which is why the compassion, why we work hard to extend the compassion to all of us, the ones that we agree with and the ones we so disagree with.
Yes. Fabulous. Sherry, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and a helpful message, and then we'll be right back.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's SANGHAmarket.com for for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sherry.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm kind of shocked that I got on, because I phoned really, really late, and I just thought I was going to listen to it on the phone, because my son's doing work on his computer, and I couldn't get online.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, we sneaked up on you.
You sneaked up on me, and it's great because I've been kind of identified the last couple of days and started the email class today with lots of resistance, and it's really great to be on the call. So,
tell me about resistance.
Yeah, okay. It starts with sensations, usually in my chest and kind of solar plexus, and then it's a story of just there's something wrong. It sort of feels like it's kind of arising out of the past.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Like, oh, this is when that happened way back and it felt horrible, and this is when that happened as well.
Again.
Again, yeah, so it's like, oh, don't read the email and don't start the class because horrible things are going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like from, like, childhood kind of flashbacks, sort of.
So there's a series of sensations and a story of dread.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And so you need to kind of tense up and hunker down against that because it's just going to get worse.
Yes.
Is that kind of the feeling?
Yes, that's exactly it. It's going to get worse. And it's not, there's nothing good can come from this. So
yeah.
Don't even start it. It's sort of like, if I think because the email class just started today and the first assignment came out, I've been having a lot of backlash the last couple of days in anticipation of the email class.
Uh-huh.
And I've been starting your, what you practice is what you have recordings. I've got my digital recorder all cleaned up and ready to go, and I've got it all ready to do the exercises. And I was looking at that whole process because that's the first assignment. So, how you do anything is how you do everything. And it brought out the big guns and all that, not wanting me to do the book and not wanting me to do the email class. So it has a lot at stake here, ego.
It does, doesn't it? And it's just amazing. It's amazing how, I can't say it's clever. It's not that it's clever. It is devious, and it's tenacious.
I love that. It is so tenacious.
Yeah.
It's tenacious and it's nonstop, and it's, could we say it's opportunistic?
Yes, I would say so.
Ooh.
And
it, yeah.
Because it sees every second of life as an opportunity, it's just always there knocking.
Yes. It's like, there's a little tiny opening, there's some vulnerability, and I've done a lot of mentoring, the little ones, a lot of mentoring with my subs. I've gotten to know about 40 subs quite personally. And it is that constant, if it can just get any of those little subs to tail along, which it has these last couple of days, I'm in a world of suffering. And but I'm seeing it all, and it's what that previous, or the good news update caller was talking about.
Yes.
When she said, I know I'm identified, and then I talk into my recorder as being identified. I've had those experiences too, that I know I'm identified.
Uh-huh.
And I just keep practicing, and I just keep sitting in, and I do pop out.
Yes.
But
yes.
But when I'm in the depth of identification, it's good to remind myself that I'm so appreciative of all the reminders around me, because the identification doesn't last nearly as long or as severe, or you know, I don't have those depths of depression that I used to have. So practice really, really works, and it doesn't mean that conditioning is going away.
Oh, no, it doesn't seem
right.
Fine, does it?
Yeah.
In fact, I have a sense, as long as I've been doing practice, which is a long time,
uh-huh.
that if I were to stop for any
yeah.
length of time at all, it would be back there, and I would be back there.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
And so I've said to people, you know, thousands of times over the years, the Buddha was practicing as a really old man on the day that he died.
Right.
So let's give up this notion that we're going to get to a place where we don't have to practice. Because the thing about it is, of course, practice is fun. It's joyful. It's
yes.
having to deal with conditioning. And what conditioning says to us is, oh, if you just didn't have to practice, you would be fine. And, of
yeah.
course, what that means is we'd be, you know, hopping in the back of that cab to hell with
right.
with the devil.
Yes. Oh, wow. Talk about a disidentifying tool. Just call open air.
Yeah.
that'll pop you straight out.
Yeah. Well, just,
I haven't
yeah,
laughed in a
sangha,
couple days.
You know?
Sangha.
That's
so important. And, yeah, and you know, I'm just sitting here listening to the show, and all of a sudden you are unmuted. I'm like, what? I have phoned for 2 months in a row, you know, 45 minutes before the show and haven't got on. Tonight I get home late. I phone, you know, 5 minutes before the show starts and I get on. There you go.
See there? We can't
yeah.
figure it out.
You can never know.
You can never
so, know. So you never know. And, yeah, just so appreciative that practice is there. And yeah, I think early in practice, Sherry, I thought actually conditioning was going to kind of go away.
Yeah.
really
yeah.
thought. But that was the story it was telling me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's a way, of course, in which it does.
Well, yeah,
it
you're true.
Does,
it's true.
Yeah. Because as you said, you know, you don't fall into the depressions you used to. Life is easier. You don't suffer like you used to. But that doesn't mean it's not there lurking, waiting, watching for that
mm-hmm.
moment it can jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has. And I think just because of the two kind of major things that were coming on the forefront of doing my recording, my new What You Practice, What You Have recording, and the beginning of this email class, which I'm going to guess is going to have a lot of those encouragements to do our compassionate mentor, which is a huge tool for me. I have used the compassionate mentor for a long time now, a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
And I have it on a lot of recordings, but I don't have it as formalized as the book is encouraging, which I do love the ongoing encouragements, which I'm going to practice.
Yeah.
And I got a big landslide of it, but that's okay. I mean, that's the practice, you know, in and out, in and out.
exactly. Yeah.
Dark room, light room, and in the light room, it's glorious. And in the dark room, it's like, whew, wow. Whew.
Not so glorious. You know,
not so
glorious. In this conversation, I something I hear from people with regularity is when they have eating issues.
Yes.
And they'll say, you know, I wish my problem were alcohol.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I would never have to drink alcohol. But
yeah.
food is so difficult because I have to eat every single day, several times a day.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of that in this conversation. You know, the alcoholic is ever mindful that it would take one drink.
Yep.
To send them back down that chute into that miserable life that they managed to get themselves out of. With eating issues, you know, the person who's addicted to sugar or that sort of thing, that constant, you know, I've got to be present to make that decision. I've got to be present and here to make a compassionate decision. It's what we're up against as creatures.
Yeah, it's what we're up against. And it sort of reminds me of just that, it's that conscious decision. You know, sort of the we're here to end suffering recitation. You know, if I'm suffering,
yeah,
it's because I'm choosing something over ending suffering.
Yeah.
What is my choice? Is this moving me towards suffering or away from suffering? Maybe like eating, is this going to indulge my eating addiction, or is this going to support my healthy eating?
Yeah, is this something I'm doing out of loving kindness for the body that manages to get me around through life so wonderfully, or am I going to feed egocentric karmic conditioning who, you know, would like to kill me if possible?
Yes, and yeah.
Reminders.
Yeah. Losing you a bit there. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it reminded me of a workshop where you said something to the effect of that would be indulging ego. Yeah, we when we do certain things, we indulge ego, and that really kind of snapped me up because I'm like, yeah, I can see when I get caught in the stories and then I just kind of follow along and I, you know, kind of lose a bit of consciousness, I indulge ego, and I have greater awareness of when I'm doing that.
Yes. Yeah.
I have greater awarenesses of how I can indulge ego or not and kind of turn my attention away from ego.
Yes, and talk about a price to pay. Once it's that random reinforcement, once karmic conditioning gets a taste of being indulged in that way, it really ramps things up for the next possibility.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's great. I hope there's time for another caller here. Oh, there is. Great. Well, I will say good night and thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And I'll look forward to following along on the email class and doing the exercises in the What You Practice, What You Have book.
See you on
both the- great supports for me.
All right.
Thanks. Great. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hey, Janet.
Hi.
Is it winter where you live yet?
You know, it really wasn't for a long time, and then it just got to be winter.
Wow.
It feels really
cold. Oh,
yeah.
Well, what else is going on besides the weather?
Well, it was funny because I had the complete different experiences of Todd. I thought I was going to be one of the first callers, and then I ended up being the last caller, and so I love that. You never know.
Never know.
Never know. So that was great. I've enjoyed all the calls tonight. It's been really good. I wanted to report that last week was my week to call because I'm trying to call every month. That was my commitment. And conditioning completely talked me out of it.
Ooh.
It just happened.
Do you know, because this is, I'm going to try, I was looking at this today. After we do this current email class, I want to do something sometime in the first of the year that really, really focuses on only how do you get talked out of practicing? Because that's the, you know, now we have this tool and it's good and it works. There's no, I mean, I have yet to talk to anybody who says, yeah, boy, made that recording and listened to it nonstop for a week, and it just didn't have any effect at all. You know,
right.
People are reporting 5 minutes of listening to it, and their lives are transformed. And yet, we get talked out of it. How's that possible?
Well, and are you asking me right now how that happened? So last Tuesday night is the night that I do group at my house. So I had finished a group at 7 o'clock, and the conversation was, wow, that was really a lot. You really spent a lot of time in awareness practice, and you need to have a break.
You need to have a break.
You know, you haven't made dinner yet. You've already done awareness practice tonight. You don't need to call into the radio
you've
show.
You've already been aware tonight. You need a break.
You had an hour of awareness practice. That's enough. And I kind of dazed out on it, you know.
You're going
and then
to definitely get that on a recording, aren't you?
Yes.
When I hear a voice say, "You've done enough awareness practice for today," I'm going to know that that is the evil one, and I am going to look at what is the next thing I can do to stay in conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yes, thank you. And see, and I called, so now I have that also. And what's funny, what's interesting is that when you gave us the assignment today, it's the same process. Because what I heard was, well, what am I hearing about getting the recorder? Oh, I already have a recorder, so I don't need to pay attention to this part. So it's that same process. It's like, well, you can check out here for a while, and we'll let you know when it's time to come back.
Ooh. Now that is one scary message, isn't it?
Yeah.
So unconsciousness is committing to letting you know when it's time to be conscious.
When it's time to be conscious.
Yikes.
When it's time to come back to conscious, an awareness practice. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
Just check out, and then we'll tell you when.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting part to me about that is the assumption, the belief that checking out is desirable.
Yeah, exactly, right. That it's something that's, you know, you've deserved it.
Yeah, you've earned it, and now you get to have it. So maybe that don't be surprised if that appears somewhere in the class. The question for folks to look at, what is so desirable about checking out?
Yeah, that is a really good one. So that's my process right there. And then tonight it was starting to rev up again. And, you know, I just, I was like, oh, I'm not going there tonight.
Uh-huh.
And I was on the phone for like 15 minutes trying to get on, to get through.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember holding the phone and yelling out to my husband, I am really, really, really wanting to do this. I am really persistent. And I've got such amazing willingness, and I'm not hanging up.
Uh-huh.
And I just loved that. It was like the opposite end.
Yeah.
It was what I was holding on to not listen, or to not listen to the story, which was so strong. Like, Janet, no, come on. This is a waste of your time calling up again and again and again.
You're getting very tired. You need to go unconscious. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And I've had a fun time on the phone, and I got to be on, and I got to talk to you, and I got to step up to conditioning.
Yeah, and listen to all of your fellow Sangha.
Yes.
Which is always inspiring and disidentifying and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good deal all around, and I love making a commitment and then seeing what happens.
Yeah. Now it'll be interesting to see if it starts in a little campaign. Okay, that was great. There, boy, you really stuck with it. You were very willing. Now you can go unconscious.
Yeah. Let's see. What do you think the chances are?
I think if I were you, I would reach for that recorder right now.
I know. I have it right next to me, Susan. That's so perfect.
Yeah, good.
So anyway, thank you so much.
Oh, you
and
are
I'm
very
really
funny.
Looking forward to the email class.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep us all focused for, at least a month. So that's good. All right.
Okay.
Take
thanks
care.
So much.
Thanks, Janet.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was fun and inspiring.
Yeah. Sangha is great.
Yes.
We should really spend more time with Sangha.
Yes, and I'm glad that we do.
I am so glad that we do. I'm so glad Sangha exists and that we know it and that that's who we get to spend time with. It's a very, very good deal.
Kind of mutually reinforcing to me.
Yeah, and you know, Michael's conversation earlier, you know, one of the things that we can do in practice is just extend our definition of Sangha.
Yes.
So not just folks who meditate with us and do the same exact spiritual practice, but this group of people and that group of people and those folks and them and those over there and
yes.
All Sangha.
Yes, particularly the bad, wrong people.
The bad, wrong Sangha. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.